From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
And I believe we can do both things. I believe we can fund the government responsibly, and I believe that we can do right by the American people and ensure the security of our elections. And I defy anybody to give me any logical argument why we shouldn't do that.
That was House Speaker Mike Johnson earlier today announcing that the House would move forward with a short-term funding measure that would keep the federal government operating past the September deadline and ensure the integrity of the fall's elections. This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us. We'll talk more about this in just a moment with Florida Congressman Mike Walls. And the House is also taking up measures today designed to address the growing influence of the Chinese Communist Party.
While the Biden-Harris administration is shutting down efforts to prosecute spies, they're bending over backwards to negotiate a new pandemic accord with the WHO, an organization that sold out the United States and the world to the Chinese Communist Party during the COVID-19 pandemic.
That was New York Congressman Nick Langworthy on the House floor just a little while ago. Also today, the Missouri Supreme Court heard oral arguments on a challenge to the pro-abortion ballot initiative slated for November.
These requirements protect voters. They do not undermine the initiative petition process. They are set forth in the Constitution and the implementing statutes in order to protect all Missouri voters.
That was Mary Catherine Martin with the Thomas More Society earlier today. Arguing before the court. The Supreme Court announced just a little while ago that the initiative will be on the ballot. Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey will join us with more. And overnight, Israeli forces eliminated three top Hamas terrorists who were responsible for the October 7th attack on Israel.
Overnight, following IDF intelligence, the Israeli Air Force conducted a precise strike on senior Hamas terrorists. The government can confirm these terrorists were directly involved in the October 7th massacre, not indirectly connected. They were directly involved.
That was David Mincer, spokesman at Israel's National Public Diplomacy Directorate. We'll talk with Gideon Israel, an advisor to Israeli Governor Yossi Dagan. Finally, cryptocurrency. Is it fueling crime and corruption? Former treasurer of the state of Ohio, Ken Blackwell, will join me here in studio. We'll also take a look at tonight's presidential debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. All of this and a bit more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. Let me encourage you, if you've not yet made your plans to join us here in our nation's capital, October the 3rd through the 6th, for this year's Pray Vote Stand Summit. You can do so, but do it quick. Go to prayvotestand.org. You can find out more information about this premier event, and you can register right there at prayvotestand.org. Again, that's October the 3rd through the 6th. Well, earlier today, House Speaker Mike Johnson announced he will continue his plan for a House vote on the six-month continuing resolution, or what's called a CR, that avoids a government shutdown, and that includes the SAVE Act. Now, this requires proof of citizenship in order to register to vote. Now, a vote could take place as early as tomorrow. With some congressional observers doubting the ability of the bill to pass in the House, would Democrats allow a government shutdown just to thwart an election integrity measure? Joining me now to discuss this is Congressman Mike Walls. He serves on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He represents the 6th Congressional District of Florida. Congressman Walls, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, good to be with you, Tony. We're on the move up here, up in Philly, getting ready for the big debate. So sorry for the backdrop, but good to be with you.
That's fine. I know you just got on the ground there. We're going to talk about that debate in just a moment. But your sense on the continuing resolution and the SAVE Act being attached to that?
Well, look, I think the leadership in the House is still really working through this with a lot of members, to be candid with you. I can tell you, as one that's on a number of the national security committees, we hate continuing resolutions. It is a terrible way to deal with our budget. It essentially continues the Democrats' budgets from year before last and doesn't put in appropriate cuts. It also freezes all of the Pentagon, not just spending, but programs. They can't start any new ships or new technologies or research and development to counter China, Russia, North Korea, and our other threats. However, as I heard you when I dialed in, we have to protect our elections. We have to make sure U.S. citizens are voting, and only U.S. citizens are voting. And when you have multiple states like Texas, like Virginia, and other states scrubbing thousands and thousands of non-citizens off their voter rolls, we fear that's just the tip of the iceberg. So our message to the Democrats is going to be, look, if you agree with us that that is a fundamental core issue of our republic to have actual citizens voting, then this should be a no-brainer. And we shouldn't even be talking about shutdown. So it's going to be a perilous path ahead, Tony. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but we're fighting through that right now.
One of the things the American people have been looking for is a return to normal government, if there's such a thing as normal, but at least the budgeting process that hasn't worked in over two decades. The House has advanced about three quarters of government funding over to the Senate. It's the Senate that is sitting on this. What options are available to the House at this present moment?
Yeah, we've passed, you're absolutely right, the vast majority of the what we call the discretionary funding, the part that we have authorization to, that we should be absolutely cutting to get our budget in order. Heck, the Senate is doing so little, Tony. They're not even, we're hearing, they're not even going to the vote on the defense bill, much less any of these tougher measures. So Schumer is really asleep at the switch. There are so many things he could be doing to help Israel, combating China, stopping anti-Semitism, and the list just goes on. But they would rather, you know, really point fingers, I guess, and demonize President Trump than actually do their job and sit down with us and negotiate.
You mentioned China, the Chinese Communist Party, the focal point actually today on the House floor, a number of bills that are up on suspension votes to move forward. Is this, I mean, we know that the Senate's not going to take these and move anything along these bills. They've let everything that the House has passed basically die. Is this more a drawing contrast between the two parties and, in particular, foreign policy priorities?
Well, just so your viewers, you know, understand the dynamic. Typically, well, I think this Congress, we will have several hundred bills that we have in a very divided environment with a very narrow majority that we have marshaled enough votes for, the vast majority of them bipartisan, 200 to 300 that pass out of the House that just sit and die in the Senate. It's really shameful, frankly. Including the SAVE Act, which already passed in a bipartisan fashion with a half dozen Democrats voting. That's the one that would stop non-citizens from voting in our election, ensure our election integrity. So on these bills, as it pertains to China, I just had one that passed. So this is near and dear to my heart. And it simply says if the Commerce Department, Treasury Department, the Defense Department, if they put a sanction in place, the other agencies have to at least review it and make a determination. They can't just ignore it or just, you know, not do their job and not even look at it at all. So these are really common sense measures that for whatever reason, the Senate is just sitting on.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this a number of times privately and publicly about the threat that comes from China. And you're right, the House has constantly been drawing attention to this. But the Senate, it's the graveyard where all good bills go to die. I want to switch gears a little bit because you were a part of, I believe, the three-year investigation into the Afghanistan withdrawal, that disastrous withdrawal. Today, Congress held a ceremony to present congressional gold medals to the families of the 13 U.S. service members who were killed in that withdrawal. Give us your thoughts on this, and what lessons are there to be learned from this?
Well, I've developed a relationship with these families as has President Trump and others. And, you know, first, Tony, I want to push back on a number of Democrats saying that this investigation was political. That could not be further from the truth. If they would actually read it, they would see that this is testimony from Biden's State Department, from career Foreign Service officers, from military officers who were involved, from intelligence operatives. And a couple of things became very clear. Number one, Biden had decided to get everybody out come hell or high water, no matter what the conditions on the ground were from day one. And according to his State Department spokesman, who testified under oath, Ned Price, that the Doha agreement that President Trump entered into was immaterial. He was getting out whether the Taliban lived up to the conditions or not. Number two, Biden on day one walked away from Trump policies, like in Iran, on the border. Heck, even the Keystone XL pipeline he made go away, but yet we're to believe he was stuck with the Doha agreement. Number three, at the end of the day, President Trump left the base at Bagram. He left our intelligence operatives, and he left some special operations troops because the Taliban hadn't lived up to six out of the seven of the conditions that were in that agreement. And then finally, Biden ignored his generals, ignored his diplomats, ignored the advice of his national security team, and ordered out our military before our allies and before our before the rest of our embassy and our civilian. It was just completely backwards. It was chaotic. It wasn't planned for. And we have these 13 dead because of it. And it was the match that lit the fuse on Ukraine, on China on the march, on the Ayatollahs and the chaos in the Middle East, because they saw weakness in this White House. All these families are asking for, Tony, is some basic accountability. Right. No one's been fired. Some transparency. They still have questions. And to get a phone call from Harris and from Biden to say, we made mistakes and we're going to ensure that we learn the lessons from it so this never happens again. Those are very basic fundamental things that they're not getting. And Harris, for one, either she was a wallflower and she was just asleep at the switch as vice president, or she was at the table. Which was it? You can't be both.
Well, I would hope that this also brings a focus to the voters that foreign policy matters, and that this is something we've got to learn from and got to get right in the future. And speaking of that, just got about 45 seconds left. You're in Philadelphia for the debate tonight. What do you anticipate from tonight's presidential debate?
Well, this is going to be a contrast of President Trump's policies that worked on the border, on the economy, on crime, and on keeping the peace around the world. And then we'll see which Kamala Harris shows up. Is it vice president Harris that embraces Biden's policies and tries to spin that they're successful? Or is it, you know, her trying to look forward with new policies? Well, I would call that California Kamala, because California is the canary in the coal mine of what progressive policies will get us if we continue down this path. And I think when they contrast that with what worked under President Trump, it'll be very crystal clear for the American people.
Well, there's certainly plenty of evidence to draw contrast from. Congressman Mike Waltz, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us.
Thank you, Tony.
Stick with us, folks. We're back after this.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Good to have you with us on this Tuesday. The website, tonyperkins.com. Again, let me remind you, coming up October the 3rd through the 6th is the Pray Vote Stand Summit here in our nation's capital, and you can be a part of it. Simply go to prayvotestand.org. That's prayvotestand.org. Well, this afternoon, the Missouri Supreme Court ruled that Amendment 3 will remain on the state's November 5th ballot. Now, the decision came after oral arguments this morning where the attorney for pro-life plaintiffs argued that the initiative petition misled voters by not including all the laws that Amendment 3 would effectively repeal. Now, if passed, this ballot measure will not only constitutionalize abortion until birth, it will also sever, from basically reading it, parental rights over sexual issues, including gender transition surgeries for minors, and could even deal with issues such as sex education in the schools. So how should pro-life and pro-family Missouri voters respond? Well, returning today to discuss this is Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey. General Bailey, thanks so much for joining us again here on Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me on, Tony.
All right, let me get your reaction to today's decision from the Missouri Supreme Court.
It's a sad day in the history of the state of Missouri. I vehemently disagree with the decision. I think that at the end of the day, there are statutory and legal requirements that these sorts of ballot initiatives put voters on notice about some of the policy positions that the initiative petitions take. And that is required to enumerate the laws that will be repealed or nullified by enactment of this constitutional amendment. The proponents of this dangerous amendment have not so notified the voters. They failed to identify a single statute that the amendment repeals. The Missouri voters are being sold a bill of goods, and the Supreme Court has now rubber stamped that going forward. It's in the hands of the voters at this point. And my prayer is that Missouri voters will wake up and go to the polls in November and realize that this is wrong for the people of the state of Missouri and is dangerous to the health and safety of children and of women.
Once the voters act on this, when we see that there were laws that are affected by this that were not enumerated in the amendment, does that open it up again to legal challenge?
It does. But at this point, whether or not that issue can interfere with enactment of the constitutional amendment has been adjudicated by the court. And that what's disappointing is that the court issued a one-page decision saying by majority vote and that opinions will be forthcoming. Now, the silver lining there is that that would seem to infer that there were at least some dissents. And so there may be a fount of legal authority upon which to act going forward based on what those dissents provide. We haven't seen them yet because the court hasn't published those yet. But I think what's especially frightening here is that the way in which the court interprets initiative petitions that are adopted on the ballot by the people, the jurisprudence in the state of Missouri, the case law says that the Supreme Court is to give those broader interpretation than statutes enacted by our General Assembly. So in other words, all the harms that you enumerated and listed based on your plain reading of the constitutional amendment will absolutely come true. And the harms could be broader based on judicial interpretation post-enactment.
I want to read part of the language again, just for the benefit of our viewers and our listeners, because we've got a lot of folks in the state of Missouri, and they're going to need to take action based upon this. But this is amending the Missouri Constitution to provide the right for reproductive freedom, which is defined as the right to make and carry out decisions about all matters relating to reproductive health care, including but not limited to prenatal care, childbirth, postpartum care, birth control, abortion care, miscarriage care, and respectful birthing conditions, end quote. I mean, that's wide open, including but not limited to. This could include any number of things, and the voters of Missouri are not going to have the benefit of knowing what those are.
That's exactly right. And again, that's why there's supposed to be safeguards in place that force the proponents of this sort of dangerous amendment to identify all of the policy positions encapsulated in the amendment and all of the statutes that will be repealed. Their failure to do so deprives the Missouri voting public of knowledge that they need to have going into the polling place. So if you don't know, vote no. Right. That's the only answer to this question. Even if you disagree with me, I'm adamantly pro-life. Every life has value. And we've got to protect life. But even if you disagree with me, surely we can all get behind the principle that the voting public should have all the information before rendering a decision. And we don't have that when it comes to this amendment.
One question. We discussed this yesterday, but I want to be very clear for the benefit of our listeners and viewers in Missouri. And by the way, folks, there's nine other states that have pro-abortion initiatives that have been put on the ballot post-Roe that need to be voted down. And so we're going to be talking about those over the next several weeks. But this one in Missouri in particular is probably one of the most far reaching of the 10. General Bailey, is it your reading and understanding that based upon this definition of reproductive freedom, that we could see a severing of parental rights to protect minors from the radical transgender experimentation of drugs and mutilating surgeries?
That's absolutely right. And that's another legal flaw within the four corners of this proposed amendment, that it encapsulates more than one subject. It goes far beyond abortion and termination of innocent life. It also goes to the mutilation of children and will remove any government safeguards that protect kids and protect a parent's right to know what's going on in that kid's life as that kid, that child may be experiencing gender dysphoria and succumb to impulses to undergo these types of procedures. It will absolutely open the door to that parade of horribles that the state of Missouri experienced prior to passage of Senate Bill 49, which proscribed gender mutilation of children.
So just to be clear again, General, so if you support life, if you do not want to see a severance of parental rights, if you do not want to see the mutilation of children, if you do not want to see radical sex education forced upon our kids in the schools without the parents having a voice, then you got to vote no on this.
Vote no on Amendment 3. The radical progressives that are pushing this amendment, and I believe have broken the law, attempt to turn Missouri into California, and Missourians do not want to be like the state of California. If you don't understand the amendment, if you haven't had time to read it, if you agree with parts of it, but you haven't had the full understanding of it, vote no on Amendment 3.
This is a Trojan horse. This is not a constitutional amendment. Attorney General Andrew Bailey, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time out of what I know has been a very busy day to join us.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, voters, and this goes for everybody, but in particular, Missouri, how do you respond to this? Well, number one, you got to pray. We need to pray, need to vote, we need to stand. And as has been clearly laid out, this is much more than abortion, even though we would vote against it for that in and of itself. But as you talk with your friends and your neighbors, your coworkers, let them know this is about much more than access to abortion. This is about eliminating laws like parental notification. And this encompasses the radical transgender policy that plays and feeds on the uncertainty that minors have about their sexual identity. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch straight ahead.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, last night, Israeli Defense Forces killed three senior Hamas terrorists responsible for the October 7th massacre. The terrorists were operating a command and control center in a humanitarian area in southern Gaza. Now, Hamas claims dozens of civilians were killed. Israeli officials dispute the claim. Join me now to discuss the situation in Gaza and the increase in terrorist activity in Samaria and Judea is Gideon Israel, president of the Jerusalem Washington Center, and he's an advisor to the governor of Samaria. He also serves in the IDF. Gideon, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Let's start first. You were just in Gaza within the last couple of months as a member of the IDF. How is the media here in the United States getting this wrong?
Well, I don't think the media understands how Hamas operates in Gaza and what the situation is. When we hear that civilians were killed and so forth, they don't understand that the whole network, the whole civilian infrastructure in Gaza is Hamas. And I'm just going to give a few examples. Oftentimes when the IDF is operating in cities within Gaza, so you could have, for example, two Muslim grandmothers, you know, 60, 70 years old, and they're just living in a building. Now, they look like innocent civilians, but they're on Hamas's payroll, and their job is to report to Hamas when the IDF is in the area. You could have people walking around. They're walking in jeans and a T-shirt. They look like innocent people, but their job is to go into buildings where the IDF has been and pick up intel, see if the IDF left anything behind. And then there's families who live together, fathers, mothers, and even their mothers, and young children all together in a house. And the husband is a terrorist, the wife is a terrorist, and they just live there, and they're on Hamas's payroll, and they're providing whatever information or coordinating whatever they need to do, coordinating attacks. They look like an innocent family. They have kids that are 3 and 5, but they're also, and then they're also part of the terrorist network. And then you have people, the actual soldiers who come and attack the IDF, the Hamas terrorists, They're not wearing uniforms. They're coming in civilian clothes. They come, they shoot an anti-tank missile, they shoot a little bit of a machine gun, and then they run back to the refugee camp and, you know, or, you know, sit down and smoke with
and
friends.
In this case, is this precision strike that took place by the IDF, the Air Force, last night, there was a command and control structure here in a refugee camp. I mean, this is, they don't mind putting civilians, as you say, there's not a bright line in between them, but they don't mind using them to facilitate their terror.
Not only do they don't mind, they do it specifically because they know that the IDF tries to minimize attacks on these so-called humanitarian areas or UN compounds. I was part of an operation in Gaza where the operation was to take out a control and command center that was in UNRWA compound. The whole compound.
Explain it for our listeners, because we talk about that a lot here. This is the United Nations Refugee
Relief Works Agency, right? This is the special agency in the United Nations that was created for the.
This was the command and control structure. We talk about that a lot because the United States has historically funded them to the tune of millions of dollars. Now, we're going to run out of time here, Gideon. I want to move to something else here because people are thinking Hamas. Gaza. But just a couple of weeks ago, one of Hamas's leaders who is living abroad was in a conference in Istanbul, Turkey, and he called upon a return to suicide terror attacks in Judea and Samaria. Now, you serve as a advisor to my friend, the governor of Samaria, Yossi Dagan. Talk about what we've seen since this. This was August the 29th. Have we seen a rise in these suicide and terrorist attacks and activity in Judea and Samaria?
Well, even before June, Hamas and the Palestinian Authority terrorists, they have been preparing for this. They have been amassing weapons that we haven't seen before in Judea and Samaria, such as shoulder missiles. They've been mining the streets with IEDs and so forth. And yes, there has been an increase in attacks. Also, there were mines that blew up beside buses. This was something that didn't happen before. And as a result, the IDF has gone on a large operation in northern Samaria, in Jenin, to uproot the terrorist organization, the Hamas, and the Palestinian Authority terrorists that are...
And they've been criticized. The IDF has been criticized by the United Nations for doing this.
Yeah, I mean that's always happening. They call it humanitarian areas. They're going to refugee camps. There really is no choice. And I would also add what you mentioned, that there is a coordination between the terror groups, between Hezbollah, between Hamas in Gaza and Hamas in Judea and Samaria. That, for example, sometimes when Hamas is in Gaza and is in a bad position, so they'll have Hezbollah in Lebanon start revving up the attacks to sort of take pressure off them.
And this. We don't have time to get into it, but this speaks to this issue of a two-state solution, because this would combine Gaza, Judea, and Samaria in the terrorist activity there, putting Israel at tremendous, tremendous risk.
It's
unworkable.
And I would even add, when we hear that phrase, we should even say just two-state idea, because it's not even a solution.
It's a problem, a big problem. Gideon Israel, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us, and I appreciate all that you do in keeping us informed here in the United States. And please give my greetings to Mayor Yossi.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, cryptocurrency, is it fueling corruption and crime? That's next.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Let me encourage you to make plans now to join us October the 3rd through the 6th here in Washington, D.C. for the Pray Vote Stand Summit. You will not find another event like this. To find out more about the event and how you can register, go to prayvotestand.org. Our word for today comes from Proverbs 25, verses 11 through 15. There's four insightful truths about our words and how we are to use them. A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and settings of silver. I mean, look for the right time and occasion to speak an appropriate word, as it will have power and impact. Be faithful to speak the right words at the right time, as those words restore. Verse 13, like the cold of snow and the time of harvest is a faithful messenger to those who send him, for he refreshes the soul of his masters. Verse 14, whoever falsely boasts of giving is like clouds and wind without rain. If you have nothing to say, don't say it. Empty words come from braggarts, like they say, all hat, no cattle. Verse 15, by long forbearance a ruler is persuaded, and a gentle tongue breaks a bone. The right words in the right way at the right time have the power of persuasion. Words and how we use them are extremely important. To join us in our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible, or you can text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. All right, before I go to my next guest, I want to go back for just a moment to the conversation I was having with Gideon Israel about what's happening with Hamas in Judea and Samaria. And I want to pull up a map. And if you're watching, you can see this. If not, you'll have to listen. But this is a very, very powerful visual, because when you look at the map, you see the green area that says West Bank. That's Judea and Samaria. That's where 80% of what we read about in our Bibles took place. That, by the way, is what is being proposed under the Biden administration as a part of the two-state solution. You see in the kind of the bottom left side, that small strip, Gaza Strip. Look at the size comparison between that and the West Bank on the map. Judea and Samaria is what they want to give away to the Palestinians. Tell me, how could you possibly defend that, the rest of the land, if you take out the heart of Israel and give it to a terrorist organization? The answer, You can't. We need to be informed, involved, pray, vote, and stand. Well, speaking of issues, most Americans know how the border policies of the Biden-Harris administration have allowed both dangerous criminal networks and drugs to pour into our country, endangering American citizens. But they may not realize that much of this lawlessness is enabled by an unexpected middleman, unregulated cryptocurrency platforms. Now, these platforms function as a digital financial safe harbor to disguise their crimes. As cryptocurrency emerges as the preferred tool of drug trafficking organizations, how should lawmakers respond at the federal level? Joining me now to discuss this is Ken Blackwell. He's Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance here at the Family Research Council. He's former treasurer of the state of Ohio. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch. Always great to see you.
Tony, good to be with you.
All right, so walk us through. You wrote a piece about this on the Daily Caller recently. This can be a complicated technical subject. Kind of walk us through, I don't have cryptocurrency. I imagine most of our listeners and viewers do not have it. What is it? Walk us through it.
Well, let me first start off by saying that there have been folks who have accused me of being a 21st century Luddite. but I've focused my attention on preserving the dollar as the international reserve currency. And so folks,
which is extremely important, because without that ability, that's what has, quite frankly, given America the standard of living that it's had, is because
absolutely.
The dollar has been the international currency. That's one of the reasons China wants to knock it off and make the yen.
Iran,
yeah.
China, Russia,
right.
They all go after the dollar. Well, it concerns me that these terrorist networks, these folks who are engaged in human trafficking and drug trafficking, see things like Tether, cryptocurrency like Tether, as being safe harbors where they can, in fact, move their profits and move their finances undetected by law enforcement agencies and the international banking community. And let me just start by saying, I'll just use Tether, for example. They have a reserve of $118 billion, which is more than all but 17 nations in the world. And they are, in fact, financing the human trafficking that's wrecking our cities and humankind. They are, in fact, pushing it's the major way that they are financing the fentanyl. And fentanyl is just, changing our cities from fields of dreams to killing fields. And so what they do is that they hide their dollars and their currency, their profits in this unregulated what they call stable coin, and then once they get it where they want to convert it back to their profit and realize the value, that's how they do it. And to me, it's just pure knuckleheadedness that keeps people from saying, we need to regulate this. We need to find out, how they're moving these finances.
So they're able to do this, as you said, undetected. It's not traceable. So let's talk some specifics. You talk about the fentanyl coming across the border. We've seen these gangs operating in Colorado recently. Is there a connection between the violence we see of these gangs that are coming into the country across the border and the financing of their weapons and activity through cryptocurrency?
Yeah. During the Biden administration, they've effectively surrendered our border. And so the cartels that are controlling the borders on the Mexican side are actually using this as a railroad to get the drugs into our city. All cities now in America are border cities. One, because there's no border security, and two, the financing of these operations, human trafficking, drug trafficking, is being financed by this cryptocurrency that's not traceable by our Treasury Department.
So, all right, let me ask you a question then, because this is very troubling for me. As you know, I served on the platform committee, the Republican Party platform committee. Very disturbed that they took out the pro-life plank. They took out the definition of marriage. They stripped out a bunch of the stuff that we've worked for decades. But they did put something new in. All right, they put something in here about cryptocurrency, and that they would block Democrats' effort to keep the cryptocurrency from expanding. So the Republican platform, if I read it correctly, embraces cryptocurrency. And as you just explained at the beginning of this, the cryptocurrency is challenging the viability of the U.S. dollar as the international standard currency.
And then what's next? A digital currency? And what happens there is that the administrative state becomes Big Brother on steroids. And so I'm concerned that we have pivoted away from protecting the dollar.
Why? Why would this be happening? Why would Republicans be proposing this?
To me, it says that knuckleheadedness is a virus.
Is it financial gain? I mean, is this like what we saw? I mean, we saw the former Speaker of the House, John Boehner, go out and promote marijuana, decriminalizing of marijuana because there's a lot of money in it. I mean, is that the same thing?
Yeah, I think so. And what concerns me, Tony, is that nobody is having a robust discussion about this. You know, there's right now. A proposal to put some minimal regulation on Tether and other cryptocurrencies, and it's going no place. You know, they're turning a deaf ear to it, and this is concerning, because at the end of the day, if they're the ostrich with his head in the ground, we are going to watch the unraveling as we're visiting now. Unraveling of our constitutional republic.
But why would we, if we want, and there's been a lot of, as we were just discussing, there's been a lot of concern, consternation over China, Iran, Russia challenging the dollar as the international currency. So why would we facilitate a competitive currency, the cryptocurrency?
Well, you know, it's the globalist class. Within our, you know, being America, being a freestanding nation state means nothing, you know, to the elitist globalist class. It is all about how they, in fact, improve their profitability.
Well, I mean, I think it may be more than just the elitist. I see this as a part of more of a libertarian tearing down of structure and law, because, you know, if you can create a currency that can't be tracked, and not that I'm for big government tracking these things, but criminal activity, I mean, this has been a key part. I mean, if you go back and you look at some of the big criminal cases through the history of our country in modern times, often it was involving the money trail. That's how you're able to get these criminals. I mean, that's where the FBI spends so much of its time, is the money trail.
Oh, absolutely.
This eliminates that.
And that's why I raised the question, you know, when are we going to put the brakes on this unfeathered approach?
See, I think it's
questionable as to whether or not we have a line of defense in preserving our constitutional republic and our nation state.
Yeah, I think, you know, part of this is probably a response to that big government. You know, we've got increasingly people don't trust the government, so they're creating alternative means. But I can't wrap my head, Ken, around the idea that the Republican Party would say we want to defend the republic, but at the same time, we want to advance those things that challenge and undermine the republic.
Yeah, and that's why, in fact, Republicans have to put forth an alternative to the runaway spending that has caused inflation, that has caused prices on groceries, gasoline, and our standard of living to take a nosedive. We need voices speaking up. And we need them speaking up at the ballot box this election.
So I want to go to the election issue here in just a moment. But here's my takeaway from this: is that we have this cryptocurrency. We've got the Republican Party promoting the use of this, which challenges the U.S. dollar as the international currency. In part, it's probably a response to a distrust for government, but it only creates a more downward spiral of our whole republic. I mean, this is not a good thing.
No, it's not a good thing. And the fact of the matter is that we're talking about limited government and, right. and actually being able to track currency is very, very important.
And this, as you said, will probably facilitate an even greater acceleration toward a central bank digital currency.
Yeah, and that's
because
scary.
Once you go to the cryptocurrency and it becomes normal, that's the next step, which is very problematic. All right, we just got a couple minutes left, Ken Blackwell. Let's talk about tonight, former President Donald Trump, Vice President Kamala Harris, square off in their first debate. What are your thoughts? What do each need to do to come out on top?
she needs to prosecute Trump as an insurrectionist and as a convicted felon because she has nothing else to say. That's the way she tries to keep the spotlight from and the questioning being, what have you done? You know, and because they have done nothing. And now, you know, she, in fact, will try to say that Trump is a corrupt official that shouldn't be returned to the White House. I think he needs to focus on saying, you know, make the basic question to the American people. Were you safer then than you are now? You know, are you better off in general? Right. Now than you were then, or were you better off back then?
So my take is that if he keeps it focused on policy, he wins. If she's able to pivot to personality, he loses.
Yeah.
Because if this becomes a cat and dog fight, he's not going to come out on top. But if he is able to be disciplined and focus on the policies, there is a vast difference between where Americans are today, where our country is today, where the world is today, compared to where it was 4 years ago.
Oh, absolutely, Tony. And he has to understand, and I think he does, that the umpire here has thumb on the scale. The moderators tonight, those asking the question, are wearing her jersey.
But the jury, the American people who will be watching, and I predict there'll be a lot watching, and I'll certainly be watching and be putting my comments out on X. But I think he has an opportunity here to speak to the American people and draw that sharp contrast between the policies and the outcomes of his administration and the Biden-Harris administration.
Paint in bold colors, yeah. Not pastels.
Yeah. It's going to be a big, big night for both of them. Ken Blackwell, always great to see you.
Tony, good to be with you.
Thanks for stopping in the studio. All right, folks, out of time for today, but let me encourage you, if you've not yet made your plans to join us here in Washington, D.C. for this year's Prevote Stand Summit, you still have time, October the 3rd through the 6th. Go to prevotestand.org to find out more and to register. And with that, we've got to continue to pray. We've got to vote. Look, you've got to make the hard decisions by doing the hard work, looking through all of the candidates from top of the ticket to the bottom of the ticket, where they stand on the issues. Vote for those who most clearly align with biblical truth. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.